Hello, space junkies, and welcome to What a Piece of Junk, the Star Wars podcast here on the Fandom Podcast Network. I am your agreeable host, Scott Bottman, and joining me is my original podcast co-pilot, Mr. Derek Marsh. Derek, how's it going out there?
Hola, Scott, ¿cómo está?
Yes, yeah, you've got the Spanish on your brain still because Derek was actually off to Mexico City last time around, so he couldn't join us here on the Drunken Gungan, but we're glad that his passport was up to date and he could make it back across the border to the good old U.S. of A.
Yes, I'm definitely glad to be back. It was fun. It was very interesting. I wish I would have gotten a little bit more time. Since it was travel for work, it was not vacation. And unlike how the movies usually portray people that travel, that get to, you know, work a few hours and then have these lavish luxury golf outings and do all the sightseeing at major cities and everything else, right? But that's not how it usually works when you actually travel for real work, unless maybe you were some senior vice president, right? You know,
right.
The companies, but the 99.999%, the rest of us have to work, you know, 12, 14 hour days and all that stuff. But no, it was a good time. It was a lot of fun. Really good group of people down there for my company that worked there at the in the Mexico side of our business, that a lot of them flew in to Mexico City at the business district where we had lots of good eat, lots of drinking. I paced myself, you know, but I did spruce it up a little bit, you know, going back and forth from like mojitos and margaritas. And then the last night, a little bit of wine. yeah, it was good stuff. So I was glad to be back, which is crazy enough though, because then, that was my second week of traveling for work. And then this week coming up for Thanksgiving, I'll be traveling again, but for at least on vacation, technically, as I get to travel to hopefully won't be too frigid world of Chicago, where last time you were there was the frigid Hoth. So
it was the frigid Hoth and the picturesque frigid Hoth at that. People doing cosplay at Star Wars Celebration Chicago. We got actual snow in April of 2019, and therefore people had actual snow in their Hoth cosplay photos, which they thought was just great. And it did look pretty awesome to look out the window and see the snowflakes coming down on General Veers and a phalanx of snowtroopers. I'm not kidding. I was like, what the what? Yeah, it was pretty great. But yeah, we're excited to have everybody joining us on this episode. Nathan is actually unavailable because he is getting, hopefully, an internet upgrade to fiber optic internet to his house from AT&T. So fingers crossed, or Wookiee paws crossed, that
unlimited power.
Yes, that's right. And he will have that work and have more internet speed. Yeah, that is the whole goal there.
Good deal.
But this episode, we are, of course, going to be discussing Star Wars Andor, episode number 11. We are 1 week away from what is rumored to be a huge, at least, you know, runtime-wise, season one finale for Star Wars Andor. Derek, I saw a headline that said it is the longest total number of minutes Star Wars streaming series finale yet for Disney Plus. Is that first of all, do we think that's true? And second of all, is that a good thing?
I feel like every time we hear this, it's like we keep saying like, oh, blah, 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 and then ends up being like 45 minutes. Even in the Marvel MCU stuff, we're like, man, they got so much time to so many things they got to fill in on this last episode, and it ends up being like 38 minutes. I mean, and magically they do, right? But it's like, man, sometimes I wish, but at least to the credit, this isn't like a 6-episode series at MCU. I mean, it's going to be 12 episodes.
Yeah.
I think it's been, you know, phenomenal overall. It's been really great to, you know, some of these episodes, specifically the episode we covered today, where it was kind of almost just, I would say calm before the storm, it felt like, right? We got a little bit of, you know, some good action with the space fighting. We got, you know, a couple of parts that we'll cover, you know, with the conversation pieces, really building, again, the character development, the story intensifying. But really, for the most part, up to the past 3 episodes prior to this one is definitely kind of fallen short with just, like I said, the way those 3 prison episodes really built up, right?
Yes.
But
this was almost another one of those things, like episode 7 of Andor was almost like an interlude, you know, that sort of
the transition.
Yeah, transition between those 2 stories, the heist and the prison. And then this felt like an interlude between whatever the prison break has occurred now. And then this is the interlude before the big season finale, which I think is going to be some sort of combination of Marva's funeral and all the intrigue that's going to be occurring there as the ISB tries to capture Andor, and then maybe even flashing back and forth between that and Anton Krieger's raid on Spellhouse, which we assume is doomed to fail because the ISB now knows it's coming.
Well, and I still think there's going to be something on the political side with Mothma too, right?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
So,
yeah.
I mean, so this really going to be like a typical Star Wars movie finale, you know, where they have three battles.
Yeah, they have three little venues going on at once. You know, there's a space, a ground, and a, you know, yeah, and some kind of duel. Right? Yeah.
So, yeah. So maybe we have the duel of wits there, right? For politicians.
There you go. We're going to have, so space will be Krieger and them doing their raid on Spellhouse. Ground will be Cassian and them doing the they'll be at the funeral, and then there'll be a funeral fight.
With Thirol and ISB, yep, and all that.
Yep. And then the duel will be Mon Mothma's duel of wits with
maybe we'll get Palp.
Oh my gosh, that'd be cool. The Emperor's there talking to her and she's all like, well, no, everything's great. Although I was thinking it might be more of a political duel between Mon Mothma and Davo or whatever his name is, the crime bossy guy that's given her the money.
Yeah, but I feel like, I mean, we can already jump into this episode, but I feel like the way she was doing it was she was going to like auction off her daughter.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is pretty disgusting. But at the same time, we see that Leda, or whatever her daughter's name is, I think it's Leda or something like that. Seems to be kind of thumbing her nose at her mom for quite a while. And now she's big into Chandrilan religion, but like not even just Chandrilan religion, but like old school, very restrictive, conservative, Chandrilan religion. That's all about a woman's places in the home and, you know, serving her husband, etc. Like what in the world?
So it may work for her in that she's like, okay, whatever, she's agreeing to it. So pay me my 400,000 credits.
Exactly. Yep. Yep. So. Yeah. Anyway, well, we can go ahead and jump into the episode discussion here. Derek, question number one, what did you like most about this episode of Star Wars Andor, episode number 11?
Probably my favorite part was when Luthen and Kleya were having their discussion while he was on the shuttle. And it was like all in
code.
Yeah, in code for like how he's like coming across this, you know, I got to get this relic or whatever, this artifact, this thing, because like it'll shut down the whole business. But at the same time, what they're really talking about is Andor, right? And the whole conversation piece. Yep. So I thought that was just really cool and clever. And then, I mean, obviously the climax right there at the end with Luthen's ship was pretty badass.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
But but that part right there leading up to it was pretty good. And then again, just overall storytelling. I mean, obviously I was a little surprised. No, I'll leave that for my negative because it was so hard to come up with it. Now that I think about it, that'll probably be my one thing I didn't like. So
yeah.
But how about you, Scott?
Oh, my favorite thing was the cargo hauler ship. You know, surprise, this is actually an awesome fighter craft and I'm going to use it to...
And he's got little dual lightsabers. He's like a Darth Maul.
Oh my gosh, he's got the beams coming out the side and he's spinning around. It's like,
Want to know why that we never see it later on then, right?
Yeah, I love seeing he blows up the TIE bomber. And then, of course, that Star Destroyer, the Aggressor class Star Destroyer that was coming after him with a massive amount of tractor beam was, concept art from the late, what was his last name? Calloway? I'll have to look this up. Anyway, the artist in question just recently passed away, actually. But it was one of the first images drawn for Star Wars as concept art long before the first movie was ever produced. And so finally seeing one of those on screen, almost exactly the same as the way that Cantwell drew it was really great for me as a long time Star Wars fan. And I loved this, the scientific reason behind Luthen being able to escape the tractor beam was tricking them into cranking the tractor beam up to maximum power and then throwing a bunch of chaff at it. So knowing
that
it was whistling birds, whistling birds that were using the tractor's own power against it. And so you hear Luthen from episode 10 say, I'm doomed to use my enemy's methods to defeat them. He literally did that with the tractor beam escape. He's using their own technology, their own weapons to defeat them. And then, of course, after he shreds the tractor, he flies off and fights the TIE fighters old school. It's just, and then immediately
jumps into hyperspace while he's still doing his Luthen maneuver, right?
Yes. Yeah, the Luthen maneuver. Yes. Yes. Good times. So definitely my favorite part of this episode. All right. So what did you dislike most about this episode?
And it wasn't that I disliked it, right? But I poor Marv. I was really hoping she was going to go out in a blaze of glory.
No. Yep. Just
yeah. What, she just died of old age.
Passed away from that illness. Yep.
Yeah. So I really thought, you know, when the way they were building it up to it was that she was going to, the way when Cassian came back the first time, right after doing the raid, and he has the conversation with her, and she's like, you know, I always dreaded going, you know, downtown the main alleyway because, you know, they killed her husband, right?
Yeah.
Mr. Andor. I don't remember his first name. Right. Yes. But, you know, and then she never, you know, walked down there. She always would purposely go the opposite direction. And then we talked about it, right? That she was so proud after that she, you know, held her head high and walked down there, right? Because she was rubbing the snub in the face of the Empire, because what they were able to do with robbing and taking the credits, right?
Yeah.
So I really thought that at some point she was, and they kept leading this up to like she was going to be the bait and all this stuff, right? Which she still could be, right? I mean, obviously, yeah. Andor has even a bigger reason to come back now, right? Because she's died, rather than just going to visit her after he's been in prison for how many months, right? Or days, however they want to consider it in the Star Wars time.
Yeah.
You know, just overall, though, I just really thought she was going to go in and like do some selfish, heroic act and be like for the rebellion or something like that. Right. And be like a suicide bomb or mm-hmm. rescue someone by sacrificing herself and doing something like that. Which, I mean, like I said, there's nothing wrong with it. I mean, again, it's great story building. It made you sit and reflect because, yeah, it was almost kind of like somebody not quite dealing with Alzheimer's, but just, you know, a really bad medical, you know, illness or like even cancer or something like that, where, you know, she was just, you know, just dying from it, as you said.
Right.
And then at the end of the day, that's what took her. Right. And, you know, and it's hard to say whether or not she got her last thing, you know, as she felt, because really the Empire did crack down on Ferrix there towards the end.
Yeah.
Where we're at now. So, but that would be the only thing that we said that would be a gripe is that I don't think they did Marv justice. I was really hoping she was going to, like I said, go down in a blaze of glory of some way.
Yeah, me too. Now, of course, there's an outside chance that all of this is a clever facade and she's not really dead. But, I mean, if any Star Wars story was going to pull that fake your own death thing, this would be the one. Because this seems like the kind of thing that dark, gritty, you know, Cassian Andor series would do. However, we did see them doing that little ritual where they make the brick out of her remains. Yeah. So
and B2,
oh,
I don't,
man.
And,
B2, you know, emo. Yeah.
You know, and it's kind of like, I'd be really good acting by B2 to be able to do that. And, you know, and I feel like, what's his name? Is it Brasso? His buddy, right? Like,
yeah.
I think he would have been in on it, right? Like, I feel like he's part of the rebellion, still struggling just to keep the day's work. But I feel like at the end of the day, you know, which maybe he'll do that heroic act and save Cassian, right? And be the one to die while saving Cassian. So,
yeah. So for me, the thing I disliked most was the continuation of Cyril's story. God, it's just been so painful to watch. And then the part that I really hated in this episode was him stealing the money from his mom to go and meet up, to be able to go back to Ferrix and hopefully get his revenge on Cassian, you know? I was a little annoyed with the whole, oh no, my video signal is terrible because I'm calling you from inside this smelting plant where I'm working now, my former boss, when Sergeant Koss or whatever his name was, was there. Although I did like the idea that there would be problems with the long-range comms net in the Star Wars galaxy, because it's always been weird to me how they are able to do planet-to-planet, you know, hologram calls and whatnot. Mm-hmm. So seeing somebody have to basically use a payphone, if you will, and then the smelter is so powerful it jacks with the signal while he's using it, that was interesting. But I feel like Cyril could have found a way to get the money from his mom without stealing it. Like, his mom's and his relationship is just terrible. And she said some terrible things to him in this episode, you know? So like, that's just painful for me to watch. I'm like, this is, I'm ready for that guy's story to reach some kind of turning point, you know?
I don't know. I feel like that's supposed to make him be like, he just seems like a scummy sleaze bag, right? Like
he is a sleaze bag.
He's only ever looked out for himself, right?
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that his mom's a saint, right?
No.
But
no.
Because obviously he's probably learned everything from her, and she's obviously, like I said, the typical, you know, woe is me, and it's all about me, and you know, and you bring honor or dishonor to the family pipe.
Yeah, I'm gonna manipulate my kids with guilt, you know, that kind of thing.
And it's the hypocrisy and bureaucracy of her, you know, that's what it is, right? So, and who knows? I mean, who Cyril's dad is, right? So, did she already bring dishonor to her family, right?
Yeah,
or because she, you know, had a kid out of wedlock, or did he die doing something, right? Because he, you know, we're assuming Uncle Tony is still a mafia don, right?
So, something like that. Yeah.
Because I'm assuming that's who she was going to go see again, right? I'm assuming she's got to be dealing with something with the underworld.
Yeah.
It's got to be, right? And obviously, hopefully we'll get to see that further down. I mean, we may get to see something here towards the end of a big cliffhanger for season one here, right? But I feel like that is something left off for season two to be figured out.
It would be interesting if Uncle Tony or whatever his name is actually, you know, the Devo guy that Mon Mothma's been dealing with. That would be pretty wild. I don't think it'd be the same person, but it could be.
Maybe, but I feel like Cyril isn't Chandrillon, or is he?
I don't know.
I feel like he's just pure Coruscant, right? Like born and raised on Coruscant.
Yeah.
That's the hypocrisy, right? And then, you know, he has to, you know.
Although it could very well be that he is from Coruscant and his mom is, but that his dad had been from Chandrillon.
And maybe, right? So his uncle, yeah, would be, you know, uncle, is Devos or whatever his name is. So,
yeah.
So maybe, but like I said, I feel like, I mean, and that could tie in and make sense that way, but I hope it's something to do more with the underworld, because that to me, on top of everything with the Empire and with the rebellion and dealing with the underworld and that, right? I think would be really good to flesh out how those are interconnected.
Right, right. Okay, so question number three, what connections did you draw to the rest of the Star Wars galaxy?
I already said it, Whispering Birds, right? To me, that was the first thing I thought. I'm like, oh, okay.
Yep.
We got a ship now that's got it. Yep, we got that. Yep. And then obviously we got to see Saw Gerrera again, which is great.
Yes.
And really that whole, again, just between Forrest Whitaker and Stellan Skarsgård, man, their conversation. Oh, yeah. I'm hoping there's just like a bunch of like an uncut version or something somewhere, that there's just like a whole dialogue that we haven't got to see because they want to cut it. But it's like 20 minutes of them just having conversation going back and forth. Like, are you ISB? But if I was ISB, would I be here or would I have you killed?
Clearly, I cannot drink the wine in front of me because you. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
So, yes.
Oh, and I also loved Two Tubes being there. And then Luthen is just like, my inside man is Tubes.
And he's like, no, he's lying.
What is this? He's lying, boss. I'm loyal.
And then he just pulls the pistol out. Right? Yep. It's all distraction. So it's interesting because it also makes you understand Saw Gerrera again further down the line, because there's always like Luthen is definitely like 10 steps ahead of everyone else, right? Yes. I mean, now whether he's one step behind Palp is yet to be seen.
Right.
But at the end of the day, right, he seems to be above and beyond everyone else. So,
yeah. And then perhaps this is the whole exchange that is what forces Saw Gerrera to get Borg Gullet, so that he can make sure people are loyal by doing a Vulcan mind meld, you know,
maybe
octopus mind meld. Borg Gullet will know the truth, you know.
So how about you?
So my biggest connection, of course, is I'll try spinning. That's a good trick. When Luthen does the spinny lightsaber ship of doom.
Wizard!
Wizard! That's so wizard, Luthen. But then also, when they were on Narkeena 5, before Cassian and Melshi get captured by those big piratey aliens, that was so great. Before that happens and they're hiding on the side of the cliff, the TIE fighter thing coming to search for them is a TIE Predator, the Dorito chip TIE that we saw in Rogue One. So yep, that was
well, that had the Death Troopers on it, right?
Eventually, yes. But then also it was just one of the things that was like flying around helping fight against the rebels on Scarif.
Okay.
I think that's right. Anyway, but yes, it was a TIE Predator. So
very cool.
It was cool to see one of those again. I'm hoping that means that maybe somewhere down the line in Andor, we'll get to see U-Wings again. Because I thought those were cool rebel spacecraft that we had never seen before Rogue One.
Yeah. And at some point, we got to see a C-Wing and a Z-Wing, so...
Yes, exactly. Or the old E-Wing, right?
So, but those, but to go back to those pirate guys, too, that was so great to see, like, true prosthetics, right?
Yeah.
And true, you know, that... I mean, again, just great stuff when they take that time and do that attention to detail kind of thing and don't go just pure CGI, because those were some big, lunky costumes.
They were. And I liked that not only did they have big bellies, right? Their bellies were hanging over their pants and whatnot, making them look even more piratey, but they added to the pirate motif by giving the main guy the, like, cybernetic eye.
Which the other guy like had a hook.
Patch. And the other guy had a hook. Yeah, totally. Yeah. Oh, and the quad jumper, the ship that Cassian and Melshi were trying to steal, is the same ship class that Rey and Finn almost steal in The Force Awakens before it gets blown to smithereens and they have to take the piece of junk instead. And it's, you know.
So maybe those pirates end up being on Jakku.
It could be, or it could just be that a quad jumper is like a very common. It's the Toyota Camry of Star Wars Galaxy.
Well, those guys kind of look like, what's his name? What was that junk dealer in The Force Awakens?
Unkar Plutt?
Yeah, kind of looked like him.
A little bit, but they weren't. Plutt, well, they didn't have multiple arms. Doesn't Unkar has four arms, doesn't he? Or did he?
That's
maybe
Dex.
He didn't. That's right. That's right. But definitely the large stature like Unkar Plutt was.
Yeah, that's
maybe, but their skin color wasn't quite the same. But then again, these two guys obviously work out in the sun, and Unkar Plutt seemed like he avoided going out in the sun on Jakku at all costs.
Yeah. I'll have to Google that. Maybe we'll see if there's a bit of species reveal of those guys and if they are. Because I mean that'd be a cool tie that we haven't figured out yet. So
yeah.
So
but I think that the quad jumper is just like, you know, a very ubiquitous type of craft.
Well, yeah, it's like a poor man's jalopy, right? So yeah. And just go out there.
So I'm saying it's the Toyota Prius of Star Wars. Everywhere you look, there's another one of the quad jumpers.
So, well, I love how it like petered out a little bit too when they tried taking off, right?
Yeah, yeah,
and it's
yeah.
like barely made the skim across the pond and before it took off. So,
yep.
So
it was cool though to see those two guys kind of live debate with each other about, do we turn them in for the cash money or do we stick it to the Empire because of all those terrible things they've done to our planet? Mm-hmm. And I'm glad that they decided to be all, you know, power to the people, down with the Empire.
Yeah. So, well, true pirates, right? I mean, at the end
absolutely.
Of the day, they're like, hey, you were trying to steal my ship. I would have done the same thing. Welcome aboard.
Exactly. Yeah. We totally respect your effort.
So, but yeah, then that was some weird, like, web netting capture thing too. It was like, oh, we got Spider-Man going on here, right? So.
Yeah, it seemed like almost organic sticky web instead of just a net, you know.
Yeah,
I wonder if that was supposed to help them catch the smaller fish, because they were talking about how all the fish on their planet had kind of died off because of the Empire. It's crazy, the Empire can't show up anywhere, like, even and do it the right way. Like, even when they go ahead and use hydroelectric power for the whole facility, which is a much more ecologically sustainable idea, they still screw the pooch and like dump out, you know, all this industrial waste from making the giant pieces of floating punctuation for outer space.
Did you hear
us talking about that? It's like Pablo Hidalgo was on Twitter and he's like, people keep asking me, what are Cassian and his fellow prisoners constructing on the prison? And I can go ahead and tell you guys without breaking any NDAs, it is giant punctuation marks for all the yellow words that fly through space in Star Wars.
That's funny. That's
clever. Like, this is the greatest thing I've ever seen.
That's trolling to another level.
It is. Yeah. So anyway, as they construct their giant punctuation marks, they dump some sort of industrial solvent into the waterways of Narkeena 5 and just kill off all the fish and wreck the planet.
Yeah.
So,
And which at some point, you know, I don't know. Well, and what's interesting too is like, what were, do we talk about this? I can't remember. Maybe you guys hit it up last episode. I haven't got a chance to listen to. I'm still trying to catch up on everything since I've been out of the country. But what did we have a discussion on, like, where did those prisons come from? Because it's not like those prisons were built in, I mean, I don't think they would have been built in like 5 years. They might have been, but like, I feel like those prisons were already there, right?
So I don't know. It seemed as though the prisons were built by the Empire, because the, remember, our piratey aliens here talk about how they've wrecked the place in such a short time. Mm. And then, and they just, they keep referring to them as the Imperial prison. Like, so if it did predate the Empire, maybe they weren't as bad off back then. But
I'm just wondering, I mean, like I said, if it was the Republic that had them built, right?
Yeah, but so. You would think that if that were the case, then maybe the Republic built those prisons to do one thing, but the Empire retrofitted them to do whatever it is they're doing, and modifying them in that way very hastily is what causes them to have suddenly polluted everything.
Maybe. I mean,
yeah.
But at the same time, because it's like, it's not like the Empire didn't build the Death Star in so many years. So
that's true. They could have easily prefabbed this prison compound to make the giant punctuation marks or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
That's my new headcanon. No matter what it turns out they were actually making, I'll be like, they were making asterisks and periods, obviously. Nice. And then the guys in the next prison area, so levels 1 through 5 make the punctuation. The other places are in charge of spray painting them yellow.
Well, because there was multiple buildings, right?
I know, yeah.
So there's very
Those buildings, I shared this meme in our Facebook group. Follow us on Facebook if you don't already. What a Piece of Junk, Star Wars Podcast. I shared this meme that showed the top-down view of Cyril's cubicle, which isn't a cube, but more like a hexagonical, at the Bureau of Weights and Measures. Then the side view of the doors at Mon Mothma's Chandrillan embassy
yep, that's good.
They're hexagonal shape, just like the computer station. And then finally, top down view of Cassian's prison is also a big hexagon shape, and it was basically showing how the director Tony Gilroy and friends had filmed it in such a way to show us that Cyril, Mothma, and Andor were all in their own version of a hexagon prison. Andor, of course, literal prison, but Mon Mothma is imprisoned by her duties as a senator. She talks about how you can't really change much around the Chandrillan embassy on Coruscant because it has to be, you know, tradition. And then, of course, Cyril is trapped in his bureaucratic prison as a member of the Bureau of Weights and Measures. Ah, just such great filmmaking. I mean, this is like Stanley Kubrick level type of cinematography, and I am here for it as a film nerd. Mm-hmm. So, and then as a Star Wars nerd, it's just like, wow, geekgasm, you know. So anyway, okay. So moving on to the customized questions for episode 11, Derek, take it away with, I'll take it away with number 4. Do you think Anton Krieger will die in the Spellhouse raid, or will he somehow escape after all of his men get slaughtered, or, you know, leave some of them behind? I mean, because we did finally see a hologram image of what that guy looks like.
Honestly, I mean, I know we talked about it here at the beginning, but honestly, I'd be surprised if they even show the battle. I didn't think that they would. I just assumed that we'll hear about it, right? We'll see, you know, something where, you know, we might get a war room scene with Saw Gerrera and Krieger calling him or something like, "Where's my backup?" And he's like, "Ah, I couldn't make it, right? Luthen told me not to come. Bye."
Two tubes is sick, sorry.
I got the COVID. I couldn't get on board. So right? I had to isolate.
Tubes has to clean his tubes.
So I assumed we weren't going to get that because I just feel like it doesn't – we already know what's going to happen, so I don't feel like it's that big of an impact, right? It's not containing any characters that we've come to know yet other than, yeah, we did get a close-up of Krieger. So I don't think we'll do it. But if we do, I would expect him to die. Because
I think they're all going to die. Yeah,
I because they made that 30 plus Krieger. Yeah, the whole time.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's funny how they keep they've talked about him a lot for us to have never seen him on screen. So
yeah, and then just that whole comment that, you know, it's with Forrest Whitaker's comment of Sauger, you know, Sauger saying, "Let's just call it war."
Yeah,
and it's just like, you know, and it's that's like that's what politicians do, and you know, these people with power in our governments, right? With that, it's just whatever. They're just soldiers.
Yes.
So if it's all for the greater good.
Yeah, I believe it was Patton who said the, or maybe it wasn't Patton. One of the famous generals of American history has said the first rule of warfare is that young men die. And so in this case, Luthen and now Saw are leaning hard into that whole thing about sometimes those guys have to die so that, you know, the next time we have a fight where there's 1,000 of us, we don't all die. Mm-hmm. And we can make some real progress against the implacable enemy that is the Empire. So yeah, my answer to the question is of will Krieger die at Spellhouse is yeah, he's toast. And I think we'll see at least a little bit of it just to give us some more ooh cool spaceship fight for the finale, like an action set piece. But because like we were talking about, you'd have the three zones of action like you do in a big Star Wars climax. So that'd be the space and then ground and character. Hat tip to the old Wizards of the Coast Star Wars TCG, where the playmat literally was separated into those three zones. And you played cards of the type into their zone, and then you rolled dice to have a fight there. It was actually not too bad of a game design, just so simplistic compared to what had come before. Anyway, I think that that Krieger is toast, and somehow we'll find out about it. So if we don't see the battle happening with our own two eyes, we'll either, like you said, get a report in the war room at Saw's camp or something like that, or we'll see it from the Imperial side, and Deidre
I would say there. The ISB side, yes.
Yeah, Deidre will be there with the ISB and getting updates about how, wow, we have eliminated three of the Rebels' X-Wings or whatever.
Yeah, none of them survived, right? So
yeah. Yeah, and she'll be getting those updates while simultaneously looking at some other screen, hoping to spring the trap at the funeral on Ferrix. Yeah.
Yep.
Okay, so question numero cinco.
So this was one, because I know we can kind of get into what we think our thoughts will be for the season finale. But what do you think Clea's actual role in the Rebellion is? So as Luthen's kind of admin executive,
right,
but really kind of the one with a bit of a spine. And I like when Val kind of asks her, like, what have you done for me, done for him lately? And she's like, everything.
Yeah, so here's my impression of Clea and what she's doing. So I view Andor as like James Bond, but he's young James Bond before MI5 has successfully recruited him and trained him to be what they want him to be. So he's so much more of a selfish and loose cannon guy, right? So that means that Luthen is the director of MI5, M. So he's M going, because not only is he super spymaster guy, but he can also go out there and take care of business, right? Which we saw him do in this episode. So M's the same way. You know, he's got a field history, so he can kill people if he has to, right? And then so that means that Clea is Moneypenny. So she is the secretary who looks like she's, you know, all looks and just there as a executive assistant at the art dealership. But that's all a cover. Not only is the art dealership a cover, but her as assistant is a cover. Inside, she's tough as nails, right? So she's not the 1960s Moneypenny that flirts with Sean Connery. She's the Ava Green one that was flirting with Daniel Craig, but then also doing a whole lot more stuff with Daniel Craig, prompting, of course, to the love story between the two of them being like the foundation of the Daniel Craig era of James Bond, making it much more serious and gritty, you know, for better or worse, depending on who you ask. And so same thing here with Andor. Clea is a gritty Moneypenny. So that's how it is, for better or worse, depending on who you ask about the tone of Andor and whether or not this is what Star Wars should be, right? So is Daniel Craig's interpretation of Bond great for the franchise? Yes. Is it what every Bond fan loves? No. Is Andor amazing Star Wars and good for the franchise? Yes. Is it loved by all Star Wars fans? No. So Clea is very much the new Millennium Moneypenny, except that she's in a galaxy far, far away a long time ago. What do you think?
Yeah. So this is mine, where it kind of connects a little bit to the rest of the Star Wars world. So so what do we, I know we talked a little bit about this earlier on, where we think who did you guys, I know you and Nathan specifically thought, who do you think is Luthen, or at least who do you think is resembling him from the extended universe?
So my interpretation of Luthen from old school EU was that he'd be the new Talon Card. Because he's got all kinds of information, but as far as everybody knows, he's a merchant of some kind who makes money selling information. In this case, it's about artwork. And, you know, actually, Talon Card did sell some art every once in a while, which is, if I remember correctly, there was one story in a comic book somewhere back in the old EU where Card knew about Thrawn's whole obsession with artwork, because Card had been selling artwork at one point as just one of the many things that Talon Card would sell, because, you know, he was all about making money. And maybe he's a little more like that Davos guy that that Mon Mothma has been working with. But when I first posited the idea that Luthen reminded me so much of Talon Card, I think it was Lee that was on an episode that said, do we know that Luthen is his real name? And maybe that's an alias. And it turns out he will be Talon Card brought back into the fold, because, you know, Thrawn's come back, and we've seen a couple of other nods to the old EU. Mara Jade hasn't shown up yet, but I feel like she's gonna.
So you've hit a little bit on it. So this is where I think, like I said, it relates to the overall. So what did you just explain Luthen and Clea as in our already established extended universe that hasn't hit quite yet?
So Talon Card and possibly one of his associates, possibly Mara Jade.
Yes, possibly. I think it's the other way. I think it's Prince Caesar and Guri.
Oh, and so you think that Clea is a droid?
I think so. Okay. And I think that Luthen is part of the underworld.
Okay.
I'm not saying he's Black Sun, but if he was, it would make sense, right? Because if you think about how those political powers would work, they would have an assistant next to him, right? The assassin droid, right?
Yeah.
So,
okay, that'd be cool. And you know what would be even crazier is if in the finale we find out that not only is Luthen basically a underworld prince, but he is Cyril's uncle. What's his name?
Very well could be.
And so then you'll have a situation where the guy who's trying to get Cassian to be a rebel is also dealing with, you know, my nephew hates your guts. So
trying to kill you. Man.
Yeah. Talk about having to walk a tightrope. Yeah, so that'd be cool. That'd be cool. I'd rather he be Talon Card and not Prince Caesar, but
well, I'm not saying he's Prince Caesar. I'm just saying on that level, right? So
yeah.
So you could have him be non-Black Sun, but be some other underworld.
Right.
And you have the other underworld, a Black Sun, and that's how we get Prince Caesar and Guri, because then that's how Luthen and Clea have to battle with it on the backside.
Okay, yeah, I can see that. Because Caesar would be trying to overthrow Palpatine, and Luthen is also trying to overthrow Palpatine. And so we would get to a point where the two of them would run it, you know, their paths would intersect.
The underworld battle, right? The gang wars type deal, right? So and obviously, and they all play the political side of things too. So
okay. So. And it would be cool to see the idea of a humanoid droid brought back into Star Wars, because we haven't seen that as much.
No, I mean, was Lobot completely?
No, he was a cyborg like Vader.
Okay, he was just cyborg. Okay, I couldn't. Yeah. So, but yeah, I think that'll be the reveal that we'll get here, is that Clea will end up being a droid assassin.
Yeah, so that would be awesome. I'm definitely down for that. So. Okay, well, we'll take a quick break and then come back and talk about our predictions for the finale, and then just a tiny little bit of Star Wars news about one of my favorite things, a typo that leads to a change in the story. So stay tuned for that.
Thank you for listening. We hope you're enjoying this podcast. Here are the other great shows on the Fandom Podcast Network. Culture Clash, where we discuss the latest in entertainment and pop culture. Blood of Kings, our show covering the entire Highlander universe. Couch Potato Theater, we celebrate our favorite movies. And Time Warp, our fandom flashback show discussing a year in movies and our favorite retro movie, TV, and pop culture topics. Good Evening, discussing all things Alfred Hitchcock. Hair Metal Podcast. We cover the rock metal music of the 80s and early 90s. Type 40, a Doctor Who podcast, discussing the time-traveling Doctor Who universe. Lethal Mullet, an action film podcast, covering the 80s, 90s, and beyond. Also, check out the Lethal Mullet Network for more great podcasts. What a Piece of Junk, our Star Wars podcast. Making Treks, a Star Trek podcast, with a deep dive into the final frontier. The Fandom Show, our Fandom Podcast Network live YouTube show discussing the hottest topics in fandom. The True Believers MCU podcast, discussing the Marvel Cinematic and Television Universe. Union Federation, our Star Trek and the Orville show. And we're proud to welcome the BQN Network to the Fandom Podcast Network. Please visit our friends on the BQN Network, a Star Trek Universe podcast that also includes your favorite topics, movies, history, superheroes, and more. You can find the Fandom Podcast Network on YouTube. The Fandom Podcast Network is also on all major podcast platforms. The Fandom Podcast Network audio master feed is on Podbean at fpnet.podbean.com. You can find the Fandom Podcast Network on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can email us at fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com. Thank you so much for listening, and remember, respect others and enjoy your fandom.
All right, great. Thanks so much, Kevin. Well, Derek, we've reached almost the end of season one of Andor. We know that there will be at least a season two. I'm pretty sure that's going to be it, but these days you can never be so sure whether or not
they're I don't think so. I think this is going to do so well that they're going to rewrite season two.
Okay, that would be cool. I'm all for a season three. That would be great.
I think they'll give us six or seven seasons.
Wow, that'd be awesome. I'm down for it because this, like I said, this has been some of the best Star Wars storytelling that we've ever seen. So that's really good stuff. Last minute predictions here. What's going to happen? We've sort of been hinting around at it this entire podcast, but definitively, what do you think is going to happen, or anything that's going to come out of left field, really be a total shock to us viewers?
Well, like I said, it just depends on where they're going to take it. I think we kind of edged a little bit of what I'd like to see out of left field, right? See a little bit that Luthen is actually part of the underworld ploy. And that, you know, like I said, Clea is actually a robot. I'm guessing, again, I don't, I mean, it depends though, because I mean, if they definitely, to what you're saying, they actually stick to it and give us like an hour and 10 minutes or something like that, not just a 45-50 minute episode. If we actually get like an extra 20-30 minutes, there's a lot that they could do with it, right, to kind of wrap up this season before they, you know, give us cliffhangers for season two. So I'm assuming Andor goes back to Ferrix. We get some big battle holdout, right? I'm guessing somebody or somebodies have to die in front of Cassian.
Yeah.
Right. So whether it's Passo, his buddy there, which is most likely who it would be. Brasso.
Yeah, Brasso. Yeah.
And then or Bix.
Yeah.
Could be Bix. I've been thinking this. I don't know if this is true or not. Do you think he somehow Cassian hotwires B2 into the partial Imperial droid to get K2SO?
Oh, maybe. So what I was going to predict was, at the funeral, there's an ISB ambush, of course, but Cassian and friends expected that to happen. So they've actually set a counter trap for the ISB, and he's going to use B2 as a bomb of some kind. He's going to rewire him to like blow up and do like a shrapnel bomb or whatever. But now that you've said that about K2, I could see him, after it's all over, he goes to the wreckage of B2 and he pulls out his, you know, personality matrix board. And then later he puts that into the K2 droid that he, and then like maybe there was a K2 droid there during the fight.
Yeah, that's what I'm assuming they'd be there, right? Yeah.
And then he rebuilds him with B2's, you know, personality. Yeah. Yeah, that would be cool. So it's sort of,
because that's how we kind of get with Lando, right? And LEE7, right? When we get.
Yep.
The Millennium Falcon, right?
L7 has her personality. Yeah.
Yep. So that's what I'm thinking. We'll kind of get a little bit of that.
That would be great. So I think we talked about how if we did the raid at Spellhouse and the funeral fight and then the duel, that'd be the three platforms, right? But that's a traditional Star Wars finale. Mm-hmm. Everything about Andor has sort of been against type and not traditional Star Wars. So maybe they're going to issue that totally, and we won't have the multiple, you know, arenas during the finale, and it'll just be the funeral thing. And then after that happens, whichever way it goes, we'll cut to Mon Mothma, or vice versa. Mon Mothma's story will happen in the first half of the finale, and then we'll cut to the funeral situation, and it'll end with the cliffhanger will be, or right before the cliffhanger, rather, will be him reprogramming K2, so that way we'll know Alan Tudyk is coming for season two, which will be great, because they have such awesome chemistry together.
And well, then they talked that he was coming, right? So yeah, I'm assuming... Yes.
Just said, I'm not in season one. That's all he said.
Yeah.
But then the cliffhanger will be that revelation that... So Cyril will have failed again, right? I got it. Cyril will have failed to kill Cassian, but during the fight at the funeral, he will save Deidre's life. And that's how the two of them are going to, you know, start getting closer together. Because I think that will happen with their creepy, psychotic romance.
Well, Cyril's creepy. She hasn't quite hit that. She's threatened to it. Yeah. But I think behind the scenes, she does like it, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. She's all like, ooh, cool. This boy's into me. And he's a weirdo boy, right? Anyway, so...
He likes stalking like others, like me.
Yes, yeah. He's stalking me while I stalk all these other people. It's so cute. Anyway, it's like watching Chucky and Bride of Chucky. Anyway, so Cyril will save her but fail to kill Andor, right? And so he'll be licking his wounds back on Coruscant, and his mom will finally be like, I'm taking you to see Uncle Tony. And the cliffhanger reveal will be that Luthen is Uncle Tony. So same guy, right? Or, oh gosh, to your theory earlier, wouldn't it be freaky deke if it turns out that his uncle is Prince Xizor, like the actual Prince Xizor, and there's a Fallen and Black Sun is there. So now he's going to be working with Black Sun while dating an ISB agent.
I mean, like, this is next level Game of Thrones, but in Star Wars.
It is. Right? And we've already started going toward Game of Thrones in space with Davos trying to arrange that marriage with his son and Mon Mothma's daughter, which, by the way, that will happen. Oh, maybe that'll be the piece of Mon Mothma's story we see is the freaking marriage.
Yeah, but I feel like she'll die. Her daughter will die.
The daughter? Yeah, that makes sense. I don't know if her daughter will die in this finale, but I think she'll die eventually.
Yeah, I mean, I could – it depends, right? Because they would have to – they'd either get married on Trendrilla or they would get married – well, I don't even know if they'd get married. They just get betrothed because, I mean, there'd have to be such a year gap, which might be what season two is, right? There's a bit of a year gap.
That's true.
So that could happen, right? A 2 or 3 year gap where, you know, because I feel like what she say that her – Mon Mothma and whatever her husband's name is, they were betrothed at like 15 or 16 or something like that, right?
Which was
like old Renaissance, right? When they used to, you know, get married at 14, 15, right? As soon as they could bear children.
Right.
That's, you know, what I feel like. But I feel like it'd be the Red Wedding, right? That they'll all die, right? And then that's how Mon Mothma was like, okay, you know, but she'll find out that it was either Davos who did it then, because he's going to rat out Mon Mothma, right, and kill both of the, you know, didn't mean to kill his son, but obviously kills the daughter, right?
Yeah.
So however you want to look at it, right? But then, you know, but somehow Luthen comes and saves her, or Saw Gerrera comes in and saves her, or something like that.
Or even Mon Mothma tells Luthen what's going on, and she's lamenting it, and then he arranges to have Saw and Two Tubes and the boys go wreck shop and kidnap the girl, and so it's the Red Wedding, but they're there to...
He wants to push her off the ledge.
Yeah.
But I feel like it's hard to say, because I feel like the way Luthen is, I don't think Luthen wants to start the rebellion. I feel like he wants to continue the war for weapons.
Yeah.
That's what I feel like it is. I feel like that's how he's thrived over the years. And it's always been political party versus political party, but with a diplomatic with the emperor just doing his whole thing. That, you know, he's losing business or something like that, right?
Yes.
And so he needs
with a totalitarian regime. He doesn't have different parties to sell weapons to.
Yeah. So I feel like at the end, Luthen starts the rebellion, but not to really start the rebellion, right? But we end up getting that out of it, right?
And he's like the people that DJ was talking about in The Last Jedi, where the arms dealers make money no matter who's buying it. And then he shows Finn the blueprints of the X-Wing and the blueprints of the TIE Fighter in the same database.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, that's good stuff. But either way, I'm really looking forward to this finale.
Season two or three, though. So
yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah, so, totally.
Yeah, it'll be super cool.
All right, cool. I'm super excited as well. Yeah. Well, there's not a whole lot of Star Wars news outside of Andor stuff this week, I did find one story about something from Episode 2, Attack of the Clones, which is a little weird for me because that's my least favorite Star Wars movie, but I still like it.
We're doing it in favor of Nathan because Nathan's not
exactly
here,
so. Yes. So the headline over at CBR.com is "How a Simple Typo Created One of Star Wars's Iconic Jedi Masters." Now, I don't necessarily agree with the adjective iconic for this character, but of course he's talking about Jedi Master Sifo Dyas, who is the guy that Obi-Wan finds out put in the initial order for the clone army some 10 years prior to Attack of the Clones. Now, in the early draft of Attack of the Clones, the script was basically having this Jedi Master be called Sido Dyas, Sido-Dyas, which is a terribly obvious alias for Sidious. So it was supposed to be that Palpatine was the guy who ordered the clones the whole time. But at one point during multiple drafts of the script, somebody missed that D key and hit the F key. And so
they're right next to each other.
They are indeed, at least on a QWERTY keyboard. Sorry, any of you out there using a Dvorak keyboard. Sido Dyas turned into Sifo Dyas, and George Lucas was all like, you know, guys, that sounds a lot better. Just rolls off the tongue. Sifo Dyas, I like it. Let's keep it. And so they kept it.
Rewrote the whole script.
Rewrote part of that story to have there be an actual Jedi Master Sifo Dyas, a completely different character than Darth Sidious. And Sifo Dyas was given this whole backstory where he had the force gift of foresight, so he could know the future. He was clairvoyant, right, through the force. And so he found out that the Republic was going to be under siege by these outside armies in the case of the Separatists. And so he knew that they would need an army to defend themselves, because at that time, and for most of its history, the Republic didn't have, well, maybe not most of its history, but for that time, the Republic did not have a standing army. And so they wrote this whole thing. And then during some episodes of Star Wars The Clone Wars, it turned out that the death of Master Sifo Dyas was orchestrated by Count Dooku and Darth Sidious, and it was all set up to get them to order the clone army to be ready for the time that Palpatine wanted them to come into existence to fight for the Republic, and then later to execute Order 66. So as a writer, I love the idea that somebody made one letter change and it inspired this whole other narrative, right? But as a Star Wars fan, I'm like, is it really supposed to be that Byzantine to us that this wasn't an alias for Sidious? It even sounds the same. I don't know, Derek, what do you think about this story? Are you surprised to learn that it was a typo, or did you just sort of feel that the whole
thing? I mean, I'm surprised it took this long to come out, but I guess it was rehashed again, probably just due to the Tales of the Jedi, right? When we get the actual Dooku side of the story, right?
Right, right.
Which to me, I mean, because they obviously, you know, they did a whole episode of it within the Clone Wars as well, right? So Filoni continued with it. Mm-hmm. But again, I feel like this is like something that would have been brought up many moons ago. But at the same time, I'm as if it's an urban legend, it makes it sound even cooler though, because you could see it totally being plausible, right? Because Sifo Dyas, and like you said, well, the D and the F, if you switch it, oh, it does sound like Sidious. Oh my God, you know, it's like nobody's cracked this code the whole time, right?
So, well, you know, when Clark Kent puts on the glasses, people are like, where did Superman go?
Yep. So
I like it. I like the that we can finally, you know, definitively say that this is one of those urban legends that was true. It's it was a alias for Sidious up until somebody had the whoopsie, and then like, oh, never mind, we're going to make it be a whole separate person. So there you have it.
Sounds like something George would do anyways.
Absolutely. Yeah. He's all like, well, what if we make it into a X-wing instead of a Y-wing? Anyway, so yeah, there you go. Okay, Derek, time for your favorite part of the show, man.
Well, I was going to say, there was one other interesting news, too. I shared it to the Facebook page. Hint, hint, please go to the Facebook page. But Din Djarin and Grogu made their first appearance at Disneyland.
Oh, that's right. They did. Yes. So this is our first time that a Star Wars character from outside the Force Awakens into the Last Jedi time frame has been seen there at Batuu in Galaxy's Edge. So I'm interested to see how people are going to be interacting with them. And if there's any sort of mention about it within the whole role-playing section of the park and whatnot. So yeah, and they look great. Did we figure out, is Grogu a little puppet in the bag that the
he's got to be animatronic.
He's animatronic. Okay.
I mean, whether it's him doing it or someone else is doing it somewhere else. Mm-hmm. I mean, again, you only get to see a snippet of what I've seen online. I'm sure there'll be a lot more, but I mean, it seems like Grogu's like completely interacting with the random, like the randomness of the random stranger, right? It wasn't like predetermined looking. So again, obviously Grogu's limited anyways because of the speech, right? It's not like he's been talking. Right. So the whole conversation of him acting like, oh, you know, so it could be, you know, like I said, exactly the way it needs to be, but it just looks phenomenal, right? And they did some really good, and they got, I mean, the way they're doing the voiceover for it, how they're getting it to record, it sounds just like a pretty good rendition of Pedro Pascal with the helmet on.
Cool. So that's great to hear. Yeah, that's awesome.
So hopefully Disney World will get it here pretty soon.
Yep.
Maybe by the night of time next October when I go.
Fingers
in 2023, we'll see. So.
Yeah. Cool. Okay, yeah. So what Star Wars t-shirts are we wearing this week?
So I've worn this once before, and now that it's getting cold, I brought it out again. It is my Rebel Alliance fleece jacket that I've had.
Oh, yes. Got the cool zip up there, pockets and so forth, and the big phoenix, the red Rebel symbol, and looks like almost a little badge there as well.
It's the little badge or whatever they have, the little communicator thing, I don't know.
Yeah,
whatever
Well, I am also taking a nod toward the colder parts of the year because I'm wearing my Yoda Christmas shirt. It's got Yoda wearing a Christmas hat, and he says, "An elf I am not," because, you know, he's got the pointy ears, but he's also green and from outer space. But I'm taking it one step further tonight. I'm not going to pick up my leg to show you my feet, but I will show you the sock I had on. Mita got me Grogu slippers. So I'm wearing my baby Yoda socks with my Yoda shirt because it's freaking cold over here in North Carolina. Although Derek's laughing at me because it's only, hey, during the podcast, the temperature has dropped. It is 34 degrees over here in North Carolina, but I think it's like 24 degrees where you are. So
yes. And then like probably 14 degrees up in the Midwest there.
So. Exactly. Yes. They're like, that's not cold, but you know, that's kind of like telling people from Florida, that's not hot. Anyway. Yes. So yeah. But if you guys want to get your own cool Star Wars What a Piece of Junk podcast t-shirt, please head over to tpublic.com and check out the Fandom Podcast Network store there for t-shirts, mouse pads, coffee mugs, et cetera, iPad case, all kinds of cool stuff for our show and any other of the awesome shows that you see here or listen here on the Fandom Podcast Network. And Derek, let people know where they can find us out there on the internet, please.
Yes. So obviously, you know, the big one that we push is the Podbean app. So you can go to fpnet.podbean.com, which is a master feed, but you can hit us on the Podbean app. Hit any of the major platforms, right? Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Google Play. Obviously, the YouTubes, right? That's what we like to see sometimes on the YouTubes when we release our video content. But you can obviously hit us up at Facebook, What a Piece of Junk, a Star Wars podcast, which is what I oversee. Email whatapieceofjunkpod@gmail.com. And the Twitter at Wars, which is what you run there, Scott. Mm-hmm. And then Instagram feed, which is what Kyle hits up at Fandom Podcast Network. And then obviously hitting us up with those Apple podcasts. Well, really, again, any of the podcasts, platforms that you download us to listen to us on, or again, on the YouTube for videos, please, you know, hit the like, subscribe, leave us 5-star reviews as much as possible, because again, it helps us in regards to all the other gazillion of Star Wars podcasts out there.
Yes.
Keeps us maybe in the top 50 percentile, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, sure. Why not? Let's say that.
I mean, I can like say, hey, where we're at right now, if we can be in the top 50% on the good half, I'm on the top half, I'm good, right? So
yes. Good times, good times. Well, thanks very much for listening tonight, everybody. We have enjoyed discussing Andor with you. We're looking forward to the season finale, and then, of course, moving on to the next awesome production from our friends at Lucasfilm. And please, always remember to respect each other and always respect each other's fandom. Well, Nathan's not here, so I'm going to have to punch it myself. So,